You're listening to the Winter Interview Series on the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, brought to you by Exmark Manufacturing. 30 years of pioneering spirit and innovation have resulted in legendary durability, all-day comfort, and unmatched cut quality. Go check them out at Exmark.com. And Crest Commercial, introducing the 8-Minute Cyber System, the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in commercial battery-powered OPE. Professional landscape can now replace their gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. For more information or to find a Crest dealer near you, visit Crest.com. You're listening to the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast, the weekly show sharing proven methods and systems in marketing, equipment, and customer service, educational and motivational, to help make your lawn care business an overwhelming success. Now, here's your host, Julio Tomei.
Welcome, Lawn Care Nation, to another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. I'm your host, Julio Tomei, and this is episode number 453, entitled Interview with Bryson Turner from Augusta Lawn Care, Colorado Springs. Well, hello, everybody, and thanks again for joining me this week on another episode of the Lawn Care Business Success Podcast. Really appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week, and of course, for the questions, comments, and feedback that you guys send through each and every week. Really do appreciate that. Without further ado, let's get right into the interview. So I'd like to welcome Bryson Turner to the show. Hey, Bryson, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing, man? It's good to be here. I'm really happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time out in your day to come onto the podcast. I really do appreciate it. And for volunteering to be the next victim on the show. I especially appreciate those who step forward and want to share their stories. So that's awesome.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's dive right into it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Yep. So I guess 30,000 foot view. I got started when I was 12-ish, and I was a military family, so I lived in Florida for the last 5 or so years of my life, and I grew up a pretty decent-sized business there, and I just moved to Colorado Springs for good as my dad just retired. I'm 17 now, and like you said before, I have Augusta Lawn Care Services in North Colorado Springs, and we are a brand new location, and yeah, that's we're just getting into spring. This will be our first spring. Came here August last year. Obviously, it's a little bit harder to start in the back half of the year, but we're looking to hit spring rush really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. When we first started chatting, you reached out to me initially, and you were under a different company name. It was BT Lawn Care, I guess, for Bryson Turner. You've since made the switch to Augusta Lawn Care, which is a franchise system. A lot of people might know, started by, I believe it's Mike Andes. Mm-hmm. What drew you to that? Why do, when you were on your own, to decide? Because from my experience, usually it's the other way around. Usually it's people will start out in a franchise and then decide, like my own personal story, that I could do it better on my own than being sort of restricted in a franchise system. So what was it about you that sort of made you go the opposite way?
Yeah, so I think it comes down to a couple things. I think one, for now, it's kind of like the immediate, like, all right, this is what I want to get out of it right now. Because really the day-to-day, like, I still go out and work in the field, right? There's no difference. They're not sending you workers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was mostly the fact that Augusta has an American-based call center. And that was the first thing that caught my eye of like, hey, they can take your calls. They'll do if you want them to, they have the ability to basically do every single thing that you would have to do on the back end or that an office person would have to do.
Mm-hmm.
My throat.
Okay, no problem.
And then in the long term, is the biggest thing is I'm looking to scale. I'm not looking to stay solo my entire life. I'm solo right now. We'll have somebody full time in late April, early May. But then we're looking to eventually grow to all of Colorado Springs and even beyond. So it's not something where I want to stay small. And so being able to kind of stick with them from the very, very beginning and grow with them and grow with their systems instead of getting a little bit larger and then realizing, hey, maybe I need a little bit of support behind me, and then wanting to switch over and having to change everything, just being able to be with them from the very, very beginning is kind of where the goal's at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. So with your particular business right now in its current stage, is the lawn care business your main income, or are you doing it like a side hustle and doing something else?
Yeah. So, like I said, with being 17, stuff like that, I'm a junior in high school. And so this is what I'm doing, as of now, full time as much as I can. So I'm in school right now. And so I do it in the afternoons and on weekends. And then, I'll be managing somebody full time starting, like I said, in late April, early May, and then working out with them in the field, when I'm able to, especially once summer hits and I'm able to put in my full 40, 50 hours a week in the field. Mm-hmm. So that's the main thing right now. So yeah, I don't have anything else that I do. I've done a bunch of random things in the past of, like different side hustles apart from this, but I've kind of always realized from a product of those side hustles that this is what I actually need to be focused on in order to achieve my goal. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. With your young age, are there, cause obviously, with, you know, guys that are older and in different stages of life and stuff like that, it's easy to find people that is or are easy to relate to, you know, in lawn care businesses that are kind of make it easy. But with your being so young, and I'm thinking about like other guys that are in the same shoes as you and even guys that are sort of the stage of life that I'm in but started at that young age that you're starting at, and how they've progressed and stuff, are there inspirations that you have found like on social media and stuff of guys your age that are or slightly older than you that are already doing it and that you take sort of inspiration and follow from that?
Yeah, I think Mike is who I found first. And I think that's, like he obviously, like you said, he's the starter of the franchise. He's also one of the largest kind of in the space on YouTube. And then I think I found after that Brian's Lawn Maintenance, and then I found Keith Kelfis, and then I found your podcast. Actually before I found your YouTube channel, I was just looking for, I feel like I had caught up on everybody else's podcast. And when I'm working in the field so much, you run through everybody's podcast really, really quickly, even though I typically don't listen to as many during the winter and I catch up during the spring. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, shoot, I ran out of all of these podcasts. Let's find more good ones. And so I think I just found yours from just kind of digging around on Spotify of, hey, what's other good lawn care podcasts? And then I've run through your entire catalog. So now I listen to the weekly episodes and I just try to find more and more things. We've got a lot more into audiobooks now. But yeah, those are the couple that I look up to. Okay. But because I mean, between you and the other three, there's anywhere from basic lawn tips of like, hey, here's what tools I'm using right now, to anywhere from, all the way to like, hey, here's the actual business side of it. So I really like that there's the operations and business side, kind of spread between the four that I named.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking more, and thank you for, that answer. When I think about your age, what immediately comes to mind to me, I don't know if you know him, I believe his name is Christian from CNI Services on Instagram, and he's really well known with Brian's Lawn Maintenance, has done interviews with him as well and stuff, and just a young up-and-comer guy that you know, was in high school, same sort of thing, then graduated and has grown the business, has multiple trucks, does tons of snow removal and stuff like that, and is just growing this like monster size business at his young age. Yeah, that's what I was sort of thinking, not so much of the kind of quote-unquote influencers, but appreciate the answer. What would you say, because you said you started originally, like even younger, like at 12, what first attracted you to the lawn care industry or sort of like, you probably have a similar story in that you probably mowed your family lawn or something like that. But what was that sort of thing that made you go, like, I could turn this into a business?
Yeah, I think I've always been like the super entrepreneurial type. And I also, like, I am never satisfied with doing like one thing for super long. In fact, business is like the first thing I've found that I am satisfied with doing every single day, because it's mm-hmm. always a different challenge. It's mm-hmm. never something I can master. And so I think that it was like, hey, I've done lemonade stands, I've done whatever kind of thing, and let's go try to find something else. So it's, yeah, like you said, I'm owning my own lawn, live in a pretty tight knit neighborhood, so I'd go pass out these paper flyers and let's see if we can get a couple lawns kind of thing. And so it did grow from obviously nothing to where it was when I left over the couple of years. And one of the biggest kind of struggles with that was I started riding like my scooter to other people's houses. I would use like their bush trimmers, maybe my bush trimmers sometimes, or my dad's bush trimmers, more what I mean. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my lawnmower, sometimes their lawnmower kind of thing. And over the couple years, then like I eventually upgraded to the family golf cart once I was finally allowed to drive that. And it had like a truck. I had like the back seat kind of folded down to this piece of metal where you could set down like your mower, your trimmer, stuff like that. So then a couple years later, I ended up driving to properties on that. And then a couple years later, it was like, oh shoot, I'm driving up in a truck now. And so some of the problem was I had clients, when I was 16 is when I left. I had clients when I was 16 that I had starting out when I was 12. And so, trying to, I guess, prove the professionalism to them of, hey, in the beginning I was riding up on my scooter and now I'm showing up in a truck, being able to justify such a price increase. Cause I think like when I first started out, it was, if you want to mow, I did not like know property size or anything like that. Is if you want to mow, it's $15. Mm. If you want me to trim, it's $2. And if you want me to edge, it's $1 more. Like that. So it's like $18 mows all around. And then over time, it's learning like, oh shoot, this property takes a lot longer than this one. So it needs to be priced way differently. Mm-hmm. And I'd say last year was my first year where it was super professional, because that's kind of when I could drive as well. And so having the struggle of, hey, this lawn's priced at $20 when really it needs to be more like $60 to hit like a very good hourly rate, trying to convince customers and things of that likeness was incredibly hard. And so I lost some people there. That's why it was kind of nice as far as business goes to move to Colorado, because none of my customers here have always known a super professional business. It's never been anything less than a professional business.
Yeah.
And so there's less of that struggle of breaking through that mold.
Mm-hmm. And those are some great points, and I absolutely 100% agree with you there. It's one of the reasons when I first started, I bought into a franchise as well, because it was that instant like brand recognition, instant professionalism with logos and signs and things that potential clients were already familiar with seeing. Multiple franchises of this particular brand that I was in around the city and stuff. So it was like a, you know, basically kind of like a 1-800 got junk type thing, right? You see it, you know what it is, sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So it was that. But it is so neat to think about you starting it as a kid and transitioning and progressing and learning those things as you grew from the scooter, then going to the golf cart with the fold down back seat. And I know exactly what you're talking about there. I've got a golf cart that has the same back seat that folds to sort of like that flat deck sort of on the back. And then going to the pickup truck and stuff and kind of realizing that, you know, things are different and you have to charge more now because now, you know, it's growing. There's more expenses with fuel and things. Those properties are different. And it's such an advantage actually in that early stage to be in a position where obviously I'm assuming you had a support system of, you know, living at home with your parents and you don't have mortgage and rent and things to worry about when you're at that age. And you can kind of figure that stuff out before, you know, a lot of guys are getting started as adults and they have all that other pressure on them that they have to pay the bills that they have. And they have more... what would it be the more of that scarcity mindset about raising those prices and losing those clients because it means more. They have to pay the rent and they don't want to lose those clients. Where for you, it was a good learning experience to be able to do that and be like, okay, I lose those clients because it, you know, I have to charge more. And if they, you know, don't understand, then they don't understand. And you don't have that same sort of pressure. So it's a really unique position that you're in to go through those lessons so early. So when you were starting this past or throughout your past year, have you gone through a season yet? Or will this be your first season under the Augusta name?
Yeah, so I officially signed on like December 20-something.
Okay.
And so this is my first spring rush. It's first spring rush with Augusta and also first spring rush in Colorado. So we don't start mowing till April 15th. And so it's a little bit later of a start because I know a lot of people around the rest of the country will start March 1st, March 15th, end of March kind of thing.
Yep.
We don't start till April 15th. And so it's kind of like we're getting to the point right now where some people are starting to sign up. We're starting to get fertilization packages signed up, aeration, overseeding, stuff like that. And then also some mowing and weed control and stuff like that. But I think that it is a little bit nice because I went to training in January and I've had these couple months to kind of figure everything out and get everything kind of nailed down. And I think I'm ready to go into this spring and really be able to hit it as hard as I can. And about what you were saying last couple of minutes as well is, yeah, I'm really, really thankful that I had that opportunity to kind of learn what it's all about instead of just starting right now and then going and hiring somebody in a month or so and going, oh shoot, now I have somebody who's depending on me to do all the things you said of, hey, I got to pay my mortgage. I got to, if they have a family, feed my family, feed my dog kind of thing,
yeah.
Of actually take care of legitimate things. And so I'm very thankful that I had that kind of ramp up instead of just being thrown right into the fire, because I can understand where things need to be at now in order to stay in business and stay profitable, more importantly.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, starting up there and then hiring employees and kind of figuring out that sort of thing. So what is your plan for this first year under the new name? Are you looking to hire employees right away? Are you going to start out solo and add employees as you grow? What's the plan there?
Yep. So solo right now, just because there's not enough work on the schedule. But kind of as an anticipation, we'll start to get really busy in mid to late April, and so that's when we're looking to hire late April or early May. So I know that for a fact we'll have one person the rest of this year, just because I'm confident in the amount of work I'm able to get. There's a chance that at some points in the year we may have two for a little bit there if we can get enough stuff kind of scheduled for the future. It would make me a little bit more confident to hire on a second guy. But I am able to work after basically 1 o'clock every single day, and then also on Saturdays. And so being able to hire that full-time person will really push the revenue for the rest of the year. And then kind of the layout of the year is, obviously we've been doing a little bit of snow. What snow people we were able to pick up kind of this winter with not really having too much of a presence brand wise, was able to pick up some snow people. So we've been doing that throughout the winter. Like I said, spring cleanups and different kind of recurring revenue packages are starting to get signed up right now. And then we are really going to try to push off kind of like bigger jobs until later in the year, either during like kind of the summer downslope or even during the winter, because Xeroscape is a lot bigger of a thing here than Florida. And that's something I've had to learn more of, is we had like paver driveways in Florida, but really there was nothing like there is here as far as big old retaining walls and flagstone paths and just like these giant, like nobody in Florida had just a yard of rock, like zero grass, just rock.
Okay.
When that's actually an incredibly common thing here. Mm. Some parts of my town, you can't even put in, like for new builds, you can't even put in grass. It's just all Xeroscape.
Okay.
And so if we're able to push off some of those jobs and say, hey, we'll get to you in this later time in the month, later time in the year, then that will really allow us to fill up our spring rush with as much recurring stuff as possible, which will in turn boost our revenue the rest of the year. Because if we're able to take on more people during the spring rush months instead of doing bigger jobs, then those recurring people will still be with us later in the year, and that will overall lead to a higher recurring revenue for the year, and then we can push off some of those bigger jobs. Obviously, if it's time sensitive, like a big spring cleanup, obviously a customer is not going to wait 4 months to have a spring cleanup done. But from what I've heard and what I've found, customers will wait 4 months to have a Xeroscape done, especially if it's even a little bit cheaper. If you make it 10% cheaper and you say, hey, we'll do it in the winter, and you can have 5%, 10%, whatever percent off, a lot of people are more apt to go with a cheaper price for the same quality product. And that also benefits us as well.
Mm. So with that Xeroscape, is that something because of like environmental things? Is it like water issues or conservation, or what's the reason behind the Xeroscape stuff?
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, we live in the mountains, but it is very much kind of like the dry area. And so it kind of does go with more of like the desert theme, if you will.
Okay.
We're by no means the desert, but kind of like that mountains, the rocks, kind of like boulders kind of thing. It kind of just fits the scenery a lot better than it would if like there was Xeroscape next to palm trees kind of thing.
Mm.
And so there's that. And also with the new builds, not being able to have grass, that is because of a lack of water. And so I think there is just watering restrictions in some parts of the town, and then in more northern parts, you can't even put in a new build with grass. And so it's kind of half and half. It looks better. We do really like how they look. Mm-hmm. Obviously we love putting them in, but it is kind of bittersweet because you don't necessarily get to maintain them for kind of like weed control and stuff like that. There's no weekly mowing or anything like that. So it is kind of like a loss of a customer as far as the routine maintenance goes, but they're super profitable for the one-time thing. And yeah, they just look good. So it's all up to customer preference, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. Very, very interesting. My, reminds me, last week, my daughter went to Arizona for, soccer, to play some of the universities down there. And, I just happened to like look at where she was on like the Find My Friends app. And, it was interesting looking there, cause I didn't really think about it until, you know, I'm not normally perusing the internet, looking at, satellite photos of Arizona or anything. And what immediately struck me was like, it's all brown and there was no lawns. I was like, there's not a house here that has a lawn. It's all just the same color, this sort of, and then, you know, dawned on me, obviously it's the desert. Like, why would there be lawns and stuff over there? So yeah, kind of reminds me of that. It's interesting how there's, I keep saying, like, I'm having these discussions, even here in the Pacific Northwest where it rains a ton, there is issues. The weather is changing constantly. And there are water restrictions that keep getting imposed more and more. There's crazy forest fires that keep happening year after year, more and more. And things are just changing. People are going to less lawns now. There's more houses putting in artificial turf and things like that. So it's interesting, you know, as the sort of industry is evolving, what a lawn care company, you see robotic mowers, things like that, what a lawn care company will be in the future with things like Xeriscapes and stuff in more and more areas that go to stuff like that, or restrictions on, you know, gas-powered equipment to maintain what is left for lawns and things like that. So interesting because of you starting in a new location and a location that has Xeriscapes to start a lawn care business, and to do that on top of doing it through a franchise. So a lot of what would seem hurdles to other people. What was it like? Obviously, there's obviously still enough lawns there to have you know, a viable business.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the Xeriscape is less than, I'd say, 10% of all lawns. I'd say that probably 80% of them have some sort of Xeriscape implemented, okay, but it's not the entire thing. So I'd say less than 10% of lawns have like zero grass and are just Xeriscape. So it's not too much of a challenge as far as that goes. And it also does give us almost easier with, I guess, sources of revenue. Because if you're just going and spraying a lot or spraying some rocks to kill weeds, that is a significantly easier job as far as toll on your body is than going and actually mowing. Because we have pretty small properties, so we're all push mower. Mm-hmm. And so it's a significantly easier, I guess, toll on your body and just going around with a backpack spray around and spraying people.
Okay.
And then, so I think that's the biggest, I mean, there's not really a challenge as far as that goes. And then moving, it wasn't necessarily my choice. Like I said, I'm 17, so I'm a military brat. Dad retired from the Air Force, and this is where I grew up, and this is where my mom grew up, so this is where we ended up.
Okay.
And so it's kind of just making the most of the situation. I think that there's pros and cons of living to Florida versus Colorado. In Florida, you can kind of, you're kind of almost mowing year round. We did at least biweekly, sometimes monthly cuts for everybody year round. And so it was weekly during most of the year, and then as it went to kind of like that December, January, February timeframe, it'd be week or biweekly or monthly. And then right up in March, we started up weekly again. So there's that, but then also there's the huge opportunity in Colorado for snow. And I think that you can, like Brian's on maintenance says, he said, you can either like go broke or you can make a ton of money doing it. Mm-hmm. And so we're right now it's really trying to make sure we get set up to not go broke doing it. And set up with good terms from the very beginning and good prices from the very beginning to be able to grow in that way. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, I think that's probably the best answer I have for that one.
Yeah. Snow is one of those things that especially if you're in a place like Colorado where that gets snow pretty regularly. Even here where I'm at, where it might snow a couple days a year, but then you have salting and stuff for more other multiple times. Like I know some people that have large construction landscape companies that do predominantly hardscape work, paved stone, driveways, things like that. But in the winter, they keep their crews on by doing the snow removal and salting and stuff. And I've had conversations with them and they've said, you know, even with the limited amount of snow that we do get here, you know, they have literally gone to say that they can make more money during the snow removal and salting period than they do the whole entire year with all the construction and hardscape stuff. So it's crazy if, you know, because it's one of those things where it has to be done and all these commercial properties are forced to do it. Whereas, you know, the other projects are kind of, people can pick and choose to when they do them and all that sort of stuff. But when it snows and it has to get cleared on those public places like, you know, stores and commercial properties and stuff like that. There's too much liability involved not to clear it. So there's a ton of potential there to make money if you're into doing the snow removal part of it.
Like you said, it's the nice thing is we live in Colorado where it does snow pretty regularly. So it's not some place where we have to worry about if it's going to snow this year or how much it's going to snow this year. It's kind of one of those things where, first of all, it's been super weird with like the El Nino winter this year. It's snowed 7 days apart almost every single week, like throughout the winter. So almost had like, it's either snowed on like Friday night or Saturday morning, almost every single weekend throughout the winter. But it's a really weird, like 7 days apart thing. But even from what I've heard, and obviously this could change in the future, but even what I've heard from other companies, and other friends around here is, there's never really winters where there's never even really months really where it's like we didn't get any snow this month or we got less than a couple of storms. We've had at least 3 plowable storms every single month throughout this winter. Actually, we're supposed to get 10 inches within the next 24 hours. And so that's something we're gearing up for here. But yeah, it's been, I mean, obviously this is my first winter here, but from what I've heard, it's a pretty consistent place where you're not going to just all of a sudden have 1 year. Cause I know last year was a really bad year for some places.
Yeah.
And Colorado was just about average. And so it's kind of higher lows, lower highs is kind of how I describe it.
Okay. Yeah. That makes, makes sense for a place like that. That would make, or the opposite for me is I'm in a place where this year we got 1 day of snow, of plowable, like good amount of snow. It snowed maybe a total of 3 times. But the other two weren't worth even guys with plows to go out, because it's followed by rain. It was maybe only an inch of snow and then it rains right away and then it all washes away. There was only the 1 day where it was, maybe 9-10 inches of snow, that fell overnight and guys were out plowing and stuff. And that was it for the entire winter, here. It's always hit or miss. This next question is one that I love asking guys because I always get a different answer from the entrepreneurs, but I always get typically the same answer from people who are employees and do shift work and stuff like that. And that is, how would you, Bryson, define success?
Yeah, I would say that I'm going to kind of rephrase it for myself. I will feel successful once is kind of how I'm going to answer it. If that's okay.
Yeah.
I guess I will deem my life successful if I achieve the goals, that I have kind of set out. And that is, at least for the short term, being able to grow this location, and also grow several other locations around Colorado Springs. Unfortunately, we don't get to like reserve spots of that because that wouldn't be fair. So while I'm growing a couple locations, somebody else could open up in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be able to kind of monopolize the area as quickly as possible. That way, the least amount of people do.
Okay.
And then I want to be able to, so essentially build wealth early to be able to, my entire life I've grown up doing missions trips. And I'm huge on that. I started an event in Florida when I lived there that we pack over 350,000 meals every single year, for kids in Haiti. And so Haiti and Dominican Republic, that one island has been, where I've done all the mission trips of my entire life. So that's something I've grown up doing. And so that's something that, long-term missions is a goal of mine in the future. Awesome. And so being able to not being, because I've met plenty of people where, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, but if God's called them to go and just pick up missions right away, then oftentimes they're sending out newsletters of like, hey, could you support us for $50 a month kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to put that burden on people I know. I want to be able to kind of fund that later on in my life by working my butt off early on in life. And so being able to kind of build wealth in the early stages of life, so I can kind of be able to kind of fulfill what I've felt called to do later on in life is kind of what I'd say. I think I'll always be doing business in some aspect, but mm-hmm. those two kind of things are my two major goals as far as that goes. Awesome. So I would feel successful once kind of those are accomplished.
Awesome. So you mentioned there wanting to expand and that you can't really reserve a space or a spot or an area or whatever like that. Is there any sort of like... what did they call it in the franchise I was in? It was like a territory. Yeah, it was like a territory.
Yeah.
So you had a territory, and they couldn't. There would be no other franchises in that territory.
Yeah. So we have territories, but they're only a couple. They're only a couple mile radius. Mm-hmm. And because where I used to live, if I had one territory, that would take up my entire town because it's like 1 mile. It's like a certain amount of miles radius for 100,000 people. Once you hit 100,000 people. And so in my old town, where it's 15,000 people, my radius would have been the entire town. Mm. So nobody else could have joined there. But with Colorado Springs, there's 600,000-700,000 people.
Yeah.
And so my territory is about 100,000 people. And so other people can join in the places where my territory is not. So I kind of want to be able to speckle those territories across Colorado Springs and take up as much space as I can to the point where I probably will try to like space them out as optimally as possible to the point where if somebody else wanted to join in Colorado Springs, they look at the map and go, ah, in that tiny little place that there's not a location. It's not even worth opening one there. Mm. And I guess I don't want to like, I'm not saying that like trying to crush somebody else's dreams of opening one here, but I do want to be able to monopolize the area as much as possible, as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So I guess it might make somebody else sad by not being able to open one, but, that's my goal as far as being able to just monopolize that.
No, that's pretty good. Actually, the 100,000 is pretty respectable. The franchise I was in, it was only 1,000 houses.
Wow.
Defined a territory. So there was a lot of crossover, you could say, from other guys.
For sure.
That would have territories nearby, and then you would feel, calls would be coming in and it'd be like, the next block over or whatever, but then it would go to the next guy or whatever the case. And that was part of the reasons why I ultimately left was just, I didn't like the way that the particular one I was in was run.
If I could ask a question, with your model, was it optimized just for solo guys or solo guys with one person, or was it kind of optimized for anybody, whoever wanted to grow?
Oh, whoever wanted, you could do it however you wanted. If you wanted to just be a solo guy with one trailer, you could do that. If you wanted to have employees and buy multiple trailers, do that. You could grow it to however big or however have it however small you wanted. There was no real rules in that, and it was one of the things that drew me when I first joined. I had to go out like training sessions with different guys and basically get to ride around the trucks with different franchisees and just kind of see. The first day was a retired guy who was literally retired, but he was bored at home and decided to buy a franchise. And for him, all he cared about was literally, and this is like going back to like 2005, all he cared about at that time was making $250 a day. That's all he cared about was that. And whether that meant mowing 6 lawns a day because he was retired and it was just getting exercise, that's all he cared about was doing that. And he would take his dog with him and play fetch halfway through each lawn and stuff like that. And he purposely didn't use any self-propelled mowers because he wanted the exercise. So it was all mowers without transmissions in them. And then the next day I went out with a guy and he had an employee and it was all like, go, 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 get as many as you can get done. And then the next time I went out was with two twin brothers, who literally were, these guys were, so crazy. They would wear the, those like camelbacks for like hydration on their backs with like the straw that goes over their necks, and with the, so they'd have the straw in their mouth, so because they didn't even want to stop to take like a drink or anything. It was like just like insanity how fast these guys were going, getting through lawns and stuff. So it was kind of neat to see, like, you can do whatever you want. You can have multiple trailers, you could make it small, you could, you know, just dabble whatever you want. And that's part of what I love about lawn care, is that you can, and why I like asking that question about defining success, because I get a different answer from every entrepreneur about what it means to them. Do you offer any services that are not lawn care or landscaping related, or are you doing those xeriscapes and stuff like that? Are you kind of, and also, are you in the franchise system? Are you restricted to what you can offer, or is it kind of anything kind of goes?
We can offer whatever we'd like to. I don't know if like we could, I'm not sure. I'm sure we could, but I don't know if like any of the franchisees that like build fences kind of thing. But as far as pressure washing and that kind of stuff, and Christmas lights, and that kind of stuff, there's no restriction. We will do Christmas lights in the winter. We don't do pressure washing. It's one of those things where the pressure washing season and the lawn care and landscaping season, I find overlap so much that it's almost two completely separate businesses as far as what you need, the systems you have to have. And so the reason we're doing Christmas lights is that it's definitely once it's slowing down. So kind of that October, November, December kind of timeline, and obviously takedowns in early parts of the new year. And so that's what I kind of like about that is first of all, the profit per hour, kind of what you can charge per hour, is crazy. And so we're working with a company called Certified Lights. They're going to be our distributor, and they also have kind of like this training thing where they'll train you, they'll give you information for free, and then the only thing they ask in return is that they're who you use when you buy your lights. And so they make money when you make money and buy lights from them, kind of thing. Yeah. So we'll do that because I like that those seasons don't overlap as much. But with pressure washing, you can still do some stuff during the winter. Oftentimes here, you can't even do stuff during the winter because everybody has their water turned off as far as exterior, because you have to, like, you blow out the sprinkler systems, you turn off your outdoor spigots or bibs or whatever you want to call them, and then you put these coverings over them so nothing like explodes or freezes through. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times you can't even use customers' water, which some people do, some people don't. I just find that it's easier. I did kind of what I was talking about in the very beginning. I did do some pressure washing with like my dad's pressure washer, but the gallons per minute, the PSI, were awful. And so I kind of just gave up because it was taking me so long. And I wasn't able to, a fair rate to charge the customer was me hardly making money because it was just taking so long with such a low powered pressure washer. So we don't do any pressure washing, but we will do Christmas lights. But yeah, there's no restriction as far as what we can do. And there's people that offer the super random services. There's also people that offer just mowing, trimming, maybe some weeding, bush trimming, that kind of stuff. There's people that their service areas are super small, so even though they'll take the 100,000 people and they'll go, actually, we're going to condense it down to this little bit, the 100,000 people could still be protected, but we're only going to serve this little area because we're so wrapped dense that we can just serve this little area. And then there's people that they offer like three services because it's the most profitable services. It's the easiest to make systems around. Instead of training your guys on 25 different things, you can just train them how to mow and trim bushes. And if you can have enough customers and be profitable enough doing that, then all the power to you, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that for there in Colorado Springs, that it's all push mowing and small properties and stuff. So what size properties is like the average there?
Yeah, so we're anywhere from like, I'd say 100 feet to 4,000 square feet is probably the most average. Okay. But the thing with the 4,000 square feet is, it's like I said, it's a lot of times it's front yards, and there'll be some area in the front yard, and then it'll be either a rock path or just literal, just like I said, we're talking about the xeriscape, just rocks and things like that. So you can't really have a walk behind or stand on or a zero turn going over those rocks because a lot of times it's also at a downslope. So it's kind of pushing those mowers down there to get to the backyard and then pushing them back up. And so on some properties we could do automatic, or I guess stand-ons or zero turns or whatever. But those are the few and far between kind of properties where it's easier just to have it standardized and just Pushmo. And so we're usually around 100 to 4,000 square feet. And then the weird thing about being in Colorado Springs is kind of the area we're in is it's those properties. And then you drive 10 minutes to the east and you're on 10 acre estate kind of thing.
Okay.
But we do some, and that's all wild grass as well. So none of that grass is super nice or anything like that. So we do have some bigger, almost like the kind of the John Deere like tractor mowers because it's so rough. And so it would kind of beat up a zero turn, but we find that those John Deere tractor mowers, they work perfectly just to mow those big acreages that are not like the nicest grass. They're also super bumpy. They might have mole hills in the middle of them and you can't see anything. And so we have some of those properties as well. And those are typically just mowing those a couple times throughout the summer because they're obviously not irrigated. So it's a really, really weird, like it's either 5,000 square feet or like several hundred thousand square feet.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds a lot. That sounds a lot like the types of properties that I do. When you're talking like the 4,000, 5,000, is that like the actual lawn or the entire property?
That's the lawn. Okay. But like I said, it's a lot of times a really small front lawn. And then those rocks where you can't get anything like with big wheels over it. And then like maybe a little bit bigger backyard. And so if it was a gate or like a path that we could get to in the backyard, we'd probably use a smaller stand on, but we just can't get to most of those properties in the back with anything like that. It just has to be push mowers.
Sounds very similar to mine, except for the property sizes. I would say mine are probably even smaller than that. I've got properties that are in that 4,000 range that's the entire property, like including the house, the sidewalks, the everything, right? So those are the ones I refer to on the podcast always as the postage stamp lawns. Like it's literally 5 minutes with a 21 inch mower that you can mow it. It takes longer just to get there and set up and stuff than to do the actual work of edging and trimming and all that sort of stuff. So interesting. And then I'm in a sort of rural what was once more farming, now it's not so much. It's more suburban, but there still is those large properties as well, like you mentioned. And I have those too, but they're none of them are like the ones you see on Instagram that are like all beautifully striped and stuff like that. They're all like what you're mentioning, mole hills and stuff. And I'm, going over them with my navigator and you're hitting rocks and stuff, mole dirt piles and things that are going over. Right. And it's just like, that's what it is. Right. That's what I've got. Right? You got to deal with
it. And a lot of it's really,
go ahead.
A lot of it's really interesting. It's like, these houses that are on there, Colorado Springs and Denver is a lot of like really old America.
Okay.
And so you'll be mowing and like some of these houses, or sometimes there'll be like barns that were from like early to late 1800s. Oh, cool. And then the house will be from like 1970 something or whatever. They'll have built a new house, but kept the really, really old barn. So some of that's really cool. It's like literal, like you said, old farmland that's been kind of divided up into a little bit more of larger estates. But even then, like you said, it's not like the super nice zoysia grass that's being striped, or Kentucky bluegrass is being striped on Instagram or things like that. It's wild grass, a bunch of flowers.
Utility cuts, I call them.
The random crap. Yep, exactly. Yeah, just almost like brush cutting.
I'm actually kind of sad. I haven't started my lawn care season yet this year, but I drove by one of my larger properties the other day and noticed a for sale sign on it. And I was like, oh, that sucks, because I know that property is going to get torn down. And all the big properties are here because of the price of real estate. The land is just too valuable. So they subdivide them and build like four or five houses on what was a nice large property before. Mm-hmm. But I was sad because the owner told me they're very, they're always so happy about my work and stuff, but they're like, you're the first person in four generations that has ever mowed this lawn. It's always been taken care of by it was like her and then her mom before that and then her grandparents and her great grandparents. They've always lived on that piece of property. So I was so sad to see that it's going to be, it's up for sale now, right? But it's kind of a privilege to be the only person outside of the family to ever mow this property, right? It's like, that's pretty cool. So this next question is the one probably that gives people the most pause for thought. where they kind of got to think about their answer. So I'm going to ask you the question, but then we'll take a commercial break, and then we'll come back and hear your answer after the break. So for you to think about, share with us a time you struggled in your business and what you learned or did to overcome it. So we'll come back with your answer right after this. So stay tuned.
In lawn care today, with the right equipment, you can do jobs quickly and correctly. Hi, Jonathan Guineri here. As a product manager at Z-Turf Equipment, I'm focused on innovations that help you get jobs done faster without sacrificing the quality your customers expect. From our acclaimed Z-Spray spreader sprayers to our Z-Aerate line and beyond, you can do more in less time. Visit ZTurfEquipment.com today to learn more about our innovative line of products.
Kress is leading the transition from gas-powered lawn equipment for professional use with the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in battery-powered OPE. The Kress 8-Minute Cyber System allows Kress-made 60-volt batteries to fully charge in 8 minutes or less. Now, professional landscapers can replace their gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. And with a full line of equipment benchmarked against gas-powered products, landscapers can finally take charge of their business and make the switch to battery. For more information or to find a dealer near you, visit Kress.com. Kress, we power the professionals.
All right, Bryson. So share with us a time you struggled in your business and maybe what you learned or did to overcome it.
Yeah, so I think there's probably two of the biggest ones. And one was kind of already talked about. It was kind of like this last year of I've been this what people call the neighborhood kid, the truck in the truck, whatever. Mm-hmm. Kind of my entire, I guess you could call it career, if you could call it that. But been kind of that as far as the neighborhood kid who, he comes and cuts my lawn for $20 and it takes him 45 minutes or whatever. Really trying to transition from the $20 cut prices to extreme. Like some people were being doubled or tripled their cut price because they had just kind of been grandfathered in for so long. Mm-hmm. And so the new people I had been giving higher prices, but the old people I'd kind of just been sucking it up, mowing it kind of thing. And then I'd say that the second one was, obviously I'm 17. So joining a franchise is not something that, is done a whole lot by 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, whatever. And so, and really in any industry, I'd say. And so, I guess working through the logistics, especially with my parents and stuff like that, was something that was very hard and at times put a strain on the relationship, which was not great. It was more of, if there wasn't anything like wrong with the franchise, it was more of a, hey, are we really doing this kind of thing? Like this is a large commitment. And like you said before, when I was growing up and other times, it was something where, hey, if I fail and I lose all five lawns or whatever that I had at that point, then it's like, oh, I'll just go back and do something else at the house. And now I have a bit of overhead per month. I have the franchise that I'm not answering to, but I am paying a monthly franchise fee for that. And then I'll have an employee next month or the month after that. And so it's kind of starting to get kind of jump into the real world. And mm-hmm. So the way I've described it is it's almost like I've like skipped college and like gotten my first full-time job where I'm like supporting a family almost, even though I'm not, it kind of feels some of that weight on my back feels like that a little bit. And so that's something that unless you're within my family or, you know, or you like within the franchise or whatever, you like nobody, not many friends, not many peers, not many, even like parents, friends, anything like that know, really how hard the whole process has been and how much of a strain it's been. Cause it's really been, kind of like, hey, if we're going to do this, we're going to have these, standards for you. This is my parents talking. We're gonna have these standards for you. We're gonna have like these are still your responsibilities. And so, talking through some of those has put some of the strain on the relationship. And so, that's probably been the second biggest one. And that it's definitely on the back half of that now, which is the nice thing, just because it's been such a long process of actually like, oh, holy shoot, are we doing this? Because in the beginning it was, no, we're not joining a franchise. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason I was allowed to is I've always kind of been doing bigger things that it's like, oh, no, we're not doing that in the beginning. Like I said, with the food packing event I started in Florida, that started out with me at 9 years old, raising $6,000, just like door knocking and doing lemonade stands and stuff like that. And so that was something where I asked my parents for years to raise $6,000. And it was like, no, you're nine, you're eight, you're whatever. We're not like, you're going to raise $4,000 and then give up, and we're going to have to go figure out how to give that money back, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And eventually they said, okay, go do it. Like, we're not like, we'll like support you, but we're not going to go like with you. We're not going to help you that much. And so I raised that money. And so, and that slowly grew over the 5 years to where, last year we raised over $130,000. We packed over 370,000 meals. This year we'll do, 350 to 370 again, 350,000, 370,000 meals again. And so it's kind of been one of those things where I've always kind of shot for bigger than what I probably should be capable of. Mm-hmm. As a lot of the young entrepreneurs you see on Instagram or YouTube or podcasts or whatever do. And so I think that's kind of what sealed my ticket. If I had never done anything like that before, it probably would have been a permanent no. And then, but because I've done some of those things, it was kind of like, okay, we'll consider it. But we're going to have to work through a lot of things before we actually allow it. Okay. So I think that's like, that'd probably be the second biggest one.
Okay. So that actually brings up a good point. So when you first, got this sort of like the initial seed about, you know, buying a franchise, how did your parents take it? And when you initially contacted Augusta, and they found out that you were 17, were there any reservations on their part? Did they require your parents to be involved in that purchase and stuff? Because I'm not sure, like, obviously in different states and stuff, I would imagine there's different rules regarding, you know, the age of people getting into contracts and or things like that. So how did that all work out?
Yep. So Augusta, thankfully, they had one or two people around my age, and then also multiple people around like kind of the 18, 19 year old age, previously already be franchisees, and they still are franchisees, but they've previously signed some of those people as well. And so really when I called, Lee is the guy, who, if you've watched Mike Andy's channel for any period of time, you've probably heard about him. And they have a podcast or whatever. And so Lee is kind of the guy who does the introductory phone call and who works with the potential candidates all the way through. And so the initial call is very much, it's not a sales call, but it's more of like a, hey, what questions do I have for them? Mm-hmm. And then they answer that. Here's like some of the information. Here's the next step forward. And so there's definitely a weeding out process. They said, I don't remember what the actual number is, but it's somewhere like 1 in 3 or 1 in 5 or something like that. The people that call in, they are like, okay, yeah, we think this is a good candidate for the next step. Mm-hmm. And so once I got past that, I had my initial call. I don't even think I told my parents that I was having an initial call. It was more of just like a, let's see if they'll let me in. Mm-hmm. And before I actually try to convince my parents to like even consider it.
Yeah.
Because if I don't want to like go through that whole process and then be like, oh, you're too young or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then I told my parents. And so, like I said, from the very beginning, it was very much a, like, we're probably not doing this. And then thankfully, a location in Denver, was the first location that I was in contact with, because kind of the homework they give you once you get off that initial phone call is, hey, go talk to a couple of these franchisees. And let first of all, like, you don't know this when you're talking to them, but that franchisee will then report back to Lee of, hey, I think this person, like, I like this person, or I think maybe they're not a good fit, or kind of like they kind of give the insider scoop as well.
Yeah.
But they also were able to provide me with a lot of information. And that's what I love about the community so much is, I was on a call with Lee like late in the afternoon, one afternoon or one evening. And then by the next night, the franchisee, his name's Garrett in Denver, had given me his phone number, and we had already had a two hour long phone call by the next night. It was just that quick. Mm-hmm. of something with support. And so Garrett also started out really young, and so my parents and his parents were kind of able to talk some of, hey, like, is this a viable thing? And so they came to conclusion eventually where, yep, I guess it'll work out. And so that's kind of where we're at today. But it was not an easy thing by any means at all. Mm. It was definitely a constant struggle throughout the whole process.
Yeah. Sounds very similar to my experience with the one that I did. It was that initial call, and then, you know, ask your questions of them. And then they actually set up a drive, like you go ride along with one person first for one day and just to get a feel for it and just to see, and they can kind of vet you out as well to see, like, are you cut out for this, going out there mowing lawns and sort of stuff, right? And then I guess the, you know, that guy reports back to the main guy and says, like, how you did that day and stuff, right? Obviously, if you're not able to do it physically or mentally or whatever the case may be, then they would let you know at that point that it's not going to move forward. And yeah, it's kind of a thing. So it's good to hear that they're doing the same thing there with that sort of vetting out process and not just going after anybody with a checkbook or something that can buy a franchise, because that wouldn't be good in the long run for anybody. What so you said that they handling, because my next question is, like, how would you market your business and share your number one marketing tip and stuff? So are you doing the marketing on your end? Do they handle all that? How do the calls work and all that sort of stuff with the situation that you're in?
Yep. So right now, and I don't really think this is going to change in the future, there's no, like, franchise marketing fund, if you will, like there is for True Green or whatever. And so we do all of our own marketing on our end. As far as kind of the back end work, there's different kind of tiers of how much you can kind of put onto their plate and take off your own plate. Mm-hmm. Right now, all they're really doing for me is receiving, like, estimate forms from the website and also receiving calls. And so I am doing a lot of estimates right now and then really all the other back end work. However, if I wanted to, I could literally have them do everything. I could have them do my estimate, my follow-up calls, my payroll, my bookkeeping, there's an option, like, for a CPA to do your taxes there. It's like literally every single thing that you could think of, email categorization, responding to emails. They could literally be like your office person. Mm. And you not have to do hardly anything as far as that. You can literally just go out and work or be an estimator or do whatever. So they have the capacity to kind of take literally every single thing off your plate. However, it's not, like, especially at my small size right now, that's not really optimal. And so, as far as, like, paying them to do all that stuff. And so, cause I have the time. So right now they're just doing, they're taking my phone calls. They're kind of taking any form of contact from a new customer.
Okay.
And then putting it on the schedule of, hey, you need to go do an estimate for that person. And then from there, it's kind of, I'm in communication with them unless they call the office. So no more phone calls go to my phone anymore, which is, incredibly amazing. So, like I said in the beginning, one of the things I joined for was to not have to be in direct communication, where I don't have to answer them right away. They can send me an email and I get back to them that day, but no phone calls are coming to my phone anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer getting up from the bathroom, like from my desk, 7 times a day to go to the bathroom to answer a phone call in school.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I tell people. Yeah. And so, like, all the direct communication goes to them, or it's an email where that's not as time sensitive.
Yes.
And so being able to have them kind of be that first line of defense, being able to take care of everything. And then also we do instant quotes for mowing and fertilization and aeration, stuff like that, where they're in the command center office and somebody calls in and they say, hey, my property is 1234 Main Street. And they go and they measure the property size and they said, okay, based off that, your mowing price is going to be this for biweekly, this for weekly. Do you want to go ahead and accept that? Do you want us to go ahead and send you, like, an actual estimate? And so, instead of having kind of an elongated process, you can almost have the job closed right then and there. They hear the price, that kind of thing. And so that's the same thing on our website, is you put in your, all your information, and then it pops up 3 different houses and it said, which one does yours look most like? And it's kind of what houses look like in our area. And they pick one, they say, all right, these are your prices for this property. Do you want to accept that? And now we can, down the road, if we, like, oh, well, they chose a 2,000 square foot house when actually their house is like 10,000 square feet, we can change the price on them, because it's like, hey, price subject to change if things aren't accurate.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
most of the time they're pretty accurate. And so most of the time they can literally go, yep, this property, I accept this quote, and then send something to command center, and command center sends them an estimate. And then it's almost as good as closed once they've kind of sent that confirmed thing from the website. So that's the biggest thing with command center, and just being able to kind of have that support. Like I said from the very beginning, that I want, with my goal of scaling so large across multiple locations, in Colorado Springs and even just Colorado in general, being able to kind of be with them from the very beginning will be significantly easier than having office people or whatever, like having a part-time person or whatever in the long run at each different location, and then going, all right, we're switching over to a command center or whatever with Augusta. And then, either if we're small enough, having to get rid of those people and just switching everything over and not being in the systems, and just being able to do that from the very beginning is important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how, obviously, having customers call is what you need to, you know, build your business and all that sort of stuff. But it's also the biggest pain in the butt that there is exactly. When you're running because of that. And it's why, again, one of the reasons, like I always give the example in the franchise that I was in back then, in those days, they had their command center, they would take all the calls, but all they would do is take the customer's information and then forward it to the franchisee who was in the area of that particular house. So you would still then, you know, and this is back in the day of like pagers and stuff. So you'd get a pager and it would show like the customer's info, with their phone number, and you had to call them back, to still talk to them stuff. So it was still right. And even back then I was like, man, like one of the reasons I left was like, I thought, well, I can do this so much better on my own because I'm not allowed to do this other stuff. I'm not allowed to have a website on my own. I'm not allowed to have, you know, be taking customers' information on my website and stuff like that. It all has to go through command center. And I was like, well, I'm going to go out and do this on my own because I've already got like, you know, ideas on how I can streamline all this and make it so much simpler and easier. And that's what I did with my own brand, just being by myself. And I get everybody who calls and listens to my voicemail, it immediately directs them to the website to say, hey, if you want a quote, go to the website, fill out the form. And in that form, they give me all their information, their address and all that stuff. It lets ask them if they have dogs, ask them if their gates are unlocked, lets them know that I'm going to show up unannounced to take a look at their property if I need to. Most times I can just look on Google Maps and give them a quote based on that because all the houses are in such a small area that I service. So I know pretty much the houses and stuff in the area. They're all pretty much the same property size and stuff. But I always obviously just double check on Google Maps to look if it's some outlier, one of those big properties or something like that. But yeah, it's all to streamline because I don't want to talk to people. It's like, go through email, like you said, where it's like not as time sensitive. Don't have to spend a whole bunch of time in the middle of the day talking to you on the phone. I can just do that. So, yeah, interesting that you're kind of along that same train of thought in that.
Yeah.
But I never had to, you know, have to go to the bathroom during class or anything to go answer phone calls.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's what's so nice about it is on one side, I'm not answering the calls any longer, so it's not the burden on me to stop what I'm doing. Even if I'm in the field, it's annoying when you're in the middle of a mow and you get a call and you're like, okay,
yeah,
let's shut everything down,
yeah,
turn the mower off, all right, let's take the call and let's turn everything back on and get back in the flow of things.
Yeah,
what's nice is it satisfies that for me, but it also satisfies the customer's immediate want to get like taken care of instead of going to the website or like getting a quote or whatever. They get to talk to a real person still, so I don't have to do it. Somebody else can do it, and the customer still gets what they were originally intending to get. So that's what I like about it the most.
Mm-hmm. So along that same sort of line, what would be your biggest frustration about running a lawn care business?
Let me see. I would say almost a frustration, but it's almost not warranted of like the customers are obviously most of the time my biggest frustration. And I'm sure once I have employees, that'll probably be my biggest frustration. But even now that Command Center takes all of the like kind of the incoming calls and the new customers and stuff like that, I still have customers where actually even just today with incoming snow stuff, we're trying to get snow invoices from last month all like settled and stuff like that. And this one lady was having a problem paying her invoice. And so this afternoon, she was one of the first customers. So she has my number. I don't answer my phone number anymore. And if she texts me, I tell them to text the number through our CRM. Mm-hmm. But she texted our CRM number twice. She texted me twice, called me twice, called Command Center, and emailed me three times in a matter of like 25 minutes. And mm-hmm. so she can't handle not being taken care of right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Her prices for that reason are significantly higher than other customers, yeah. because so much extra time to talk to her.
The PETA tax.
She just stays. And so I think that is the biggest thing is customer, like there's I mean, obviously, I think that, try to think. Dale Carnegie, I read the book, How to Make Friends and Influence People.
Yep.
And I think that was one of my favorite books I've ever read, because if I was in her situation, I probably wouldn't have freaked out as much, but I would have been frustrated that I can't figure something out. And so I would have wanted my problem taken care of immediately. And so trying to put myself in those shoes of, well, yeah, it's really annoying to me. And yes, either way, she should not have. She was in the wrong for contacting us 9 times in 3 minutes. But either way, she did want her problem taken care of as soon as possible. So I can understand where the original frustration comes from. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the biggest things I picked up from that book of, hey, if you were the customer, it may not be my fault, but it's also not their fault that they can't figure out how to get to something. Maybe our interface is too complicated or something like that. It's not their fault they can't figure out how to do something. Even though it's not our fault, it can be nobody's fault and them still have a problem. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have to be something where the blame is placed. It just has to be something where their needs are taken care of either way. And so that's something that I've tried to work on in myself, of not necessarily saying, well, I'm not in the wrong, so you should have figured out how to do it yourself. It's more of the like, hey, nope, neither person has to be in the wrong. And at the end of the day, the problem still has to get taken care of. And mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of things in life, but that's especially with customers. And then once I've never had full-time employees. I've had people in Florida that worked for me from like school, like good friends, things like that. But I'm sure with employees, it'll be the exact same thing of, hey, maybe they were wrong on a certain situation, but they think you're wrong. If you were them, you'd think yourself was wrong as well. And so being able to put yourself in their shoes and then also point to like, okay, so let's actually walk through this of, so that here's the facts, right? And then letting them come to the conclusion of, oh, maybe I was wrong, by themselves, instead of just pointing the finger immediately back and saying, no, you were wrong for doing this, saying, hey, there was this, 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 and this, here's the facts. And then them going, oh, maybe I was wrong. That's going to have an incredibly, I guess, a much better impact on them and leave a much better taste in their mouth than just proving that they're wrong and then just going about your ways. Because then they're going to be like, oh, well, that's dumb. We were both mad.
Yeah.
And now like nobody walks away from that like happy, but giving them the facts for them to come to the conclusion by themselves leaves you still in the same situation that you would if you proved that you were right, and also leaves a better taste in their mouth. I mean, that in the end, if anything, is going to help your turnover rate and your churn. So that, I think that's, I kind of went off topic there, but I think that was a good little rant is the answer to the question.
Yeah. It, you're going there talking about, the customer that you gave as an example there. And it reminded me that I have to raise the price on one of my clients this year. Mm-hmm. The same thing. I have to add the PETA tax to them because they were just one of those clients that was just like, and I think it partly because people have taken advantage of her in the past with her lawn and doing things. So when I came along and gave her a quote and told her exactly what needed to be done, it was like cut and dry. Like, this is what you need. There's, all that other stuff is not necessary, or whatever the case may be. Like, why would they charge you for that if they don't know you have that issue, or whatever the case may be? So, but she's always like coming out and almost like testing me on it. It's like, so what are we gonna do about this again, sort of thing. It's like, well, exactly mm-hmm. what we talked about last week and the week before that and the week before that. You keep asking me the same question week after week.
Yep.
And or she'll come out and, what are we doing today, or what did you do last month, and it's like, lady, come on, like, let me get yep. some work done.
Yeah,
sort of thing, right? It's like one of those clients.
With this specific customer too, this is not the first time that I should say she's a repeat offender as far as like the constant communication. And every single time at the end of the email, as nicely as humanly possible, we say something along the lines of, please, it's like, if you email us, please leave us a certain amount of time to be able to get back in touch with you before utilizing other forms of communication. Because mm-hmm. actually, like, it factually will allow us to get back to you quicker if we can just read one email, say, hey, okay, here's the solution to the problem. Send the email back to her instead of saying, all right, let's read these 8 text messages she sent on 3 different phone numbers. Sorry, my voice is getting cracky.
Yeah.
Read these 8 different text messages. Let's go back and listen to the 3 voicemails she left. Let me read the notes that Command Center left when she called Command Center. and then gather all that information and respond, it's so much easier to just go, all right, she wants this. Here's the one email. Here's the one text or whatever it is. And then just being able to respond to that immediately. Well, like, hey, you're actually going to get responded to in all quicker than if you communicate with us 100,000 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we're down to the last two questions. So this next one is share your best piece of advice with those just starting out in the business. So this would be something or somebody that you know that you like and you only want to see the best for. So if somebody like that came up to you and said, hey, Bryson, I'm thinking about starting a lawn care business. What's your best piece of advice for me? What would you say?
I would say before you start, I would delay starting however long it takes you to fully grasp the concept of professionalism. Because like I talked about within Florida, if I were to go back, even though I was 12, I would still learn how to be as professional as possible before starting out and going and doing jobs. Because any customer that you pick up while you're not professional, it's going to be incredibly hard to change the image in their mind mm-hmm. of you from the non-professional person changing it to the actual professional person. So I would say delay it the day, week, month, couple months that you need to watch as much YouTube or whatever courses you need to actually fully grasp professionalism and how and what to carry that out and what methods to carry that out in, I guess, as far as, hey, does that come in the form of being uniform? Does that come in the form of like getting a haircut, shaving off your beard, mm-hmm. trimming off your beard better, so like you're more presentable to the customer, buying new shoes, buying new pants, so you're not pulling up in holy jeans. Maybe get a long sleeve shirt to cover up all the tattoos you regret. And like just being more professional to the customer, and especially over the phone, having a clear voice, actually picking up the phone, like being able to set up some sort of system where you can pick up the phone or you have some call center that is. Because when you go on Google Maps and you call 10 companies, unless they're a giant company that's doing $700,000 plus a year, most of them aren't picking up the phone. Mm-hmm. And so like that's one of the biggest problems is learn how to just pick up the phone. And that's going to portray extreme professionalism right there. Speak clearly on the phone. Don't be like, oh, somebody on your long term. How can I help you today? that's not going to work. Like being able to every step of the process from the initial contact all the way to the invoice, having every step of the process be nothing less than 100% professional is going to be the biggest thing that can make or break your business. And so that's something that we've definitely focused on as far as like having employees, having everybody have business cards, having everybody be in the same uniform. We're going to do this year where like we give you $50 to go buy out a pair of work pants kind of thing. And it has to be tan work pants. Can't be gray work pants. Can't be blue work pants. Can't be black work pants. You're going to go buy work pants and you're going to show me the receipt. And I'm going to give you $50 for it. I'm going to reimburse you for it. Mm. Because it's better if everybody shows up wearing the yellow Augusta. And whether that be a sweatshirt or a shirt or a polo or whatever, I don't really care what it is, but it's yellow Augusta. It's going to be clean and you're going to all have the same color khaki or not necessarily khakis, but work pants on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so being able to like, you don't have to do all those things, but having the couple things where a customer goes like, oh yeah, that's a professional company right there. That's going to make you stand out the biggest. So I said, that's my biggest piece of advice is, wait until you can fully grasp it, until you can fully implement that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I'll add one more thing, something I've seen from time to time that I always just shake my head at, and that's keep your social media separate and clean. Don't go posting personal stuff on your business Instagram page. I remember watching this one guy. He was great. He did really good work. Nice edging and everything was really fantastic. But then Friday night would hit and he'd have like sitting around a table with hard alcohol, gangster rap playing, guns on the table. And it's like, this is your business, like Instagram page. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that? Like, that makes no sense to me. Maybe that's the clientele he's targeting. I have no idea. But I'm like, that just makes no sense to me.
Don't make comments on posts with your business page.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some of those as well. We're like, it's like, ooh. If I were a customer to see that, like even I, who's not a customer, have a completely different image of that person or that company now because I just saw that one comment on a post or a reel or whatever. Make sure you post those separate.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So last question for you, and it's an easy one, and that is how can people follow you online?
Yep. So my business should be Augusta Lawn Care, North Colorado Springs, and that's on Instagram. Probably the best way to get in touch with me is via Instagram. If you want to get, there's a better chance of me replying quicker if you just my personal. I don't care if people follow it or not. Just if you want to reach out to me, my personal would be Bryson J. Turner on Instagram.
Okay.
But you can message the business or the personal. That's probably the best way to do it. And then my email, it's BrysonTurnerCO@gmail.com. I got a good one for that. And then I think that's probably the best ways. I don't really check Facebook Messenger or anything like that. I have a Facebook page and then a Facebook business page, but I don't. If you reach out to me on those, it might be a month before I actually see those.
Okay.
And so that Instagram is probably the best way, whether it be the business or personal.
Awesome. So thank you so much for coming on to the show and sharing your lawn care business journey thus far.
Yeah, I really appreciate having me. It's super cool. I think this is the first podcast I've done with a big podcast person.
Awesome. We'll have to do a follow-up next winter and see how your first season under the franchise went.
Alrighty. Well, thank you.
Awesome. Have a great day. So there you have it, Lawn Care Nation. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that value-packed interview episode with Bryson Turner from Augusta Lawn Care, Colorado Springs. I'll leave a link in the podcast show notes on his Instagram page, or you can go there and follow him and follow along his business journey. So that's it for this one, guys. Here's to wishing you guys all overwhelming success and freedom in your lawn care business. Bye for now.